Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Dr. Peter Cookson. And Dr. Cookson is going to talk about the coronavirus and the economy. So, good morning. How are you, Peter?
I'm just fine. I've been outside, and the sky is so clear that it's just such a pleasure to be out there getting some vitamin D the old-fashioned way.
Great. So you have specific thoughts about the economy and the coronavirus. Can you tell me what they are?
Yes. Pardon me. We have two separate problems. One is the economy of the Western world, and especially the United States, has been in dire straits ever since, well, for a very long time. Certainly, we experienced a severe downturn, recession, as they called it, in 2008-2009, from which we never really truly recovered. Although, despite the fact that the federal government has told us that everything is wonderful and we're all back to normal, quote unquote, until along comes an epidemic, which very quickly became a pandemic, which means that it involved a great number of countries around the world. So at that point, the federal government relied upon a system to control the extent or the spread of the virus. And the system is very, very simple. What you do is you limit the number of people who contract the virus by limiting the mechanism that the virus has used or developed to spread itself from one reservoir or from one individual to another. And in the case of coronavirus, it's an aerial spread, or it's a spread by breathing, coughing, sneezing, talking. in other cases, for instance, what comes to mind, there are other viruses that have different means of transmission. Or notably, HIV, for instance, is a bloodborne and bodily fluid-borne virus that gets transmitted from one individual to another by any number of bodily fluids, including tears, saliva, et cetera, et cetera. But coronavirus is quite different, and that is it is spread by aerosols, can be created simply by talking, but and also by coughing, sneezing, and so on. So here we have a country, including Western Europe and the United States, that finds itself in serious economic difficulty, that is now confronted by a pandemic that will limit the economic activity of that cult, of those peoples, of that country. And so what a good country would do, for instance, Germany or South Korea or Singapore and China, was to limit the number of people that are exposed to it by, for instance, in the case of coronavirus, asking the people to wear a mask to divert or to delay or to obstruct the pathway of the virus from one person to another. And that works. It actually works. Certainly works in other diseases that are transmitted by bodily fluid mechanisms. There are ways to interfere with the transference of the virus, in, for instance, HIV. In the case of coronavirus, why you put a mask on, and then you say to, you tell people to stay home. These are the techniques that were used in 1918, 1919, and very successfully when they were vigorously employed, brought to a halt the epidemic that killed so many millions of people 1918 and 1919, 100 years ago. So unfortunately, what that involves is a shutdown of many layers of or many types of economic activity. And so people don't go for airplane rides. People don't go to restaurants. People don't go to movie theaters or
mm-hmm.
or go to ballparks and watch football games or baseball games or basketball games, et cetera. So since our economy is a an economy that's based on consumption, the
mm-hmm.
individuals, when you suddenly put a stop to consumption, then the economy collapses. So now what do you do? You've got an economy that was teetering on collapse anyhow, and the central bank in the United States, as well as in Europe and Japan, were printing money with the hope that by just throwing money into the economy, it would keep on going and it would not collapse. But suddenly what you do is you remove the underpinning of the economy, which is consumption, the whole thing is going to come down or is coming down like a house of cards. So they threw a whole bunch of they, being the central banking, the Central Reserve or the Federal Reserve banking system, which is a private system, believe it or not, they realized that they needed to throw more money at it. So where are they going to throw the money? Well, we need to throw a little bit to the people, and the rest of it we're going to throw to our friends, the banks and the major corporations. This is basically what they did. And the major corporations said, we promise that we will keep our employees working and we will continue to behave as if nothing bad is going on. Well, we both know what happened when they to some of those outfits that tried that. First of all, the major agribusiness corporations that tried to continue processing meat products, they found that you couldn't do it without people, and the people were getting sick and some of them dying. So, oh my goodness, now what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, okay. So we closed down the shop and it's not really working. And then I heard this morning something that's really interesting, and that is a comparison between the results of the successful attempts to control the virus in a stable, economically stable, viable economy, notably Germany. Their unemployment before the arrival of the virus was about 4%. And then after the arrival of the virus and many people got sick, their unemployment rose to 5%. On the other hand, in the United States, the economy, the unemployment rate in this country prior to the onset of the coronavirus was 3.5%. And now they're hedging their bets, but most people who are savvy with regard to employment and unemployment say our unemployment rate today is in the range of 20%. So instead of going from 4 to 5, we went from 3.5 to 20. That's a lot of people who don't have any means of putting food on the table. You know, they threw a few dollars at them and called it employee benefits, unemployment benefits, all of which were going to run out in staggered rates and it's at staggered intervals, put it that way, over the course of the next few months or so. And we're going to have a major problem. So you're going to have a major problem with unemployment. And everything just gets all mixed up in there in my mind, and in an effort to explain it, it's very confusing. And that is this a chicken and egg problem, or do we have two simultaneously occurring disasters? And I would opt for two simultaneously occurring disasters. One is a collapsing economy, and the other is an epidemic. And the issue of we can predict where the collapsing economy came from. There are good economists who will tell you what's going on, and they will blame capitalism, and that's the system. We got a few rich people at the top who own the government, and everybody else is a worker, a slave. And when you rear your head and say, no, I won't work for slave labor wages anymore, then they say, well, that's fine. We'll close the factory and move it someplace else. Well, they did that. And the people at someplace else said, well, we're not going to work for nothing anymore. And so then they keep moving it around until finally there's no place else to move it. And they're pretty close to getting to the no place else to move it to, because the Mexicans said, no, we're not going to open up the factories again so you guys can have the parts that you need to manufacture your automobiles. And the other places say, no, we're not going to open up again, or we are going to start paying our workers a living wage, so you guys, so that will increase your cost to manufacture your sweaters over here. Well, the sweater merchants in the United States will move the manufacturing to Vietnam or perhaps Bangladesh or to the islands, Solomon Islands, etc. But they're pretty soon getting to no place else. It sounds like I'm chasing things around, and actually I am, because it's very complicated. And 30 minutes is hardly enough time to appreciate what's evolved over the course of the last, you know, recently months. And there's good evidence. There's an article that I came across yesterday that's just breathtaking by Elizabeth Eves. It was first published in the New Yorker and was in partnership with the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. And it's breathtaking in terms of the number of defense laboratories that have been manufactured by the United States or have been set up by the United States over the course of the last few years or so. And I use the term biodefense very loosely. Just like we have this huge department across on the west side of the Potomac that we call the Defense Department, that conducts itself in a way that one would wonder whether or not the name, which was changed to the Defense Department in the end of the 1940s or early 50s, should indeed be the Defense Department, or perhaps should be changed back to what it was from the time that when it was first initiated. Anyhow, so the other question that you posed earlier was, do I think that the disease was created to cover up the economic disaster that is inevitable? And I don't believe that somebody actually thought it through to that point, but that's always possible. But certainly, with all of these laboratories, not only in this country, but other countries look at us, and much like we looked at Iraq in 2003 and said, oh my goodness, they have weapons of mass destruction. And our good friend Secretary of State Colin Powell went before the United Nations General Assembly and demonstrated in a variety of ways that Iraq was manufacturing weapons of mass destruction because they had all of these biodefense laboratories, and we know they had them because we set them up. And so is it possible that other countries on the planet look upon the United States and see all of the biodefense laboratories that we have set up and understand the risks that each one of these laboratories poses, not only to our own citizens? And I say that really interesting because our wonderful Senator Hillary Clinton, who looked after the interests of the citizens of the state of New York for some period of time, when confronted with the risk or with the possibility of extending the Plum Island Biodefense Laboratory to a higher level, which means that it would then be able to or be suited to take care of or explore or experiment with highly contagious potentially lethal organisms, not just bacteria, but also viruses, and that is to move it from a, what's called a DSL, you know, level 3 to a DSL 4, she said, no, not in my state. That is way too dangerous. And the local representative of the east end of Long Island in the House of Representatives agreed with her 100% and said, I don't want that laboratory on Plum Island to be certified to take care of lethal organisms that can be spread through the air. So the Homeland Security said, well, we'll move it to the middle of to Kansas, in the middle of the cattle and hog raising world of the United States. So, you know, so they moved it out. They're in the process of building this humongous laboratory out there in Kansas State University campus. And bless their hearts. I wish them well. But it's a very dangerous, dangerous thing to be building a laboratory that is handling organisms that are unpredictable, that we're seeing right now when, despite the best efforts of our fearless leaders who said, well, don't worry, you can go ahead back to your usual activities, the virus is done, are now experiencing dramatic increase in the numbers of cases of coronavirus throughout the country, especially in those states that had, quote, opened up, unquote, before they should have. How's that? And that last is my opinion. Although it is shared by many other people who just simply said, well, that's enough. That's enough lockdown. Go ahead and open up, and you guys don't worry about everything because the virus is finished. Well, it's long from finished, and it's my opinion that this virus is going to be with us for a very long time, at least another year or two. And I'm not altogether confident that they'll be able to come up with a vaccine unless they already have come up with one. And I just have my own ideas as to why I think that was done, because anybody who's doing any kind of research on these terrible viruses is aware of the fact that not only can you devise a virus that's lethal, but also how do you make a vaccine for these in the event that it should escape from the laboratory? So they know these things happen. They know these accidents happen. These are very smart people. So what's the chances that they have already been working on a vaccine? I said it's reasonable to think that these very smart people know that you should have that in your back pocket when you're working on the viruses that are this dangerous. It's like, you know, working... you should have a bomb disposal crew if you're working on making bombs. I should know what to do with the darn thing if it gets out of control. Does that make sense? So anyhow, that's an opinion that I believe that these are very smart people who understand that if one of these gets out the door, then we should be prepared to deal with it. And so, well, in England in 2001, some hoof and mouth disease got out the door in one of their DSL-3 laboratories, and they had to kill 6 million sheep and cows and pigs. That's a lot of pigs and cows and sheep to kill, and that's a lot of very hungry farmers. What do they do? Is the government going to step in and say, well, we'll pay you for the losses, the economic losses that you resulted from a failure on the part of our institution to prevent, to adequately guard against an escapee? And then it happened again in 2007, so they were a little quicker on the draw in England. It was a different laboratory, but fewer animals died as a result of an escape of hoof and mouth. What were they doing from 2001 to 2005 with that organism? I just don't understand why they're messing with it, and for 5 years, and then it gets out again, and nobody had a clue. It's difficult for me to understand how they can justify that kind of research year after year after year, knowing the risks that they take and the risks to the population and to themselves as well. All right.
Let me ask you this question. You know, I put the news on and I see what's going on in the federal government and the politics of it. Do you think that Donald Trump is cognizant of the extent of the problem?
That's an interesting question. And when you put it that way, I can tell you this, and that is, there are some individuals in his immediate vicinity, that is, who initially appeared with him during the conferences, the daily conferences that he had, who are cognizant of the virulence, how awful this virus is, and how easily it spread. Yes, he does have good people around him. Now, are those good people that he has around him able to demonstrate to his satisfaction the importance and the potential disaster that we are looking at is another matter. And that has to do with his ability to fully comprehend what they're trying to say. I know I didn't answer the question. You know, it'd be nice if there was a yes, no. What I'm saying is that, he's behaving as if he has no idea what the heck he's dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
That's the answer to the question. When you look at him, you say, why did he do that? Or why isn't he directing the Treasury Department to help the people rather than the bankers? What, dear?
We're in the midst of a presidential campaign.
Yes.
And I don't have much faith in Joe Biden.
Yes.
Because I think although he's quite old, as most of us are, I don't think he has the mental capacity to deal with everything that's going on. So if Joe Biden won the presidency, do you think all of a sudden things will get better in this country?
Okay. The answer to that question will be apparent as soon as we are able to assess to look at the list of individuals that he gathers about him to help him arrive at the conclusions that he must arrive at in order to govern wisely. There are good people out there that are ready, willing, and able to assist Mr. Biden in that endeavor. If he should gather about him individuals who are not as competent or whose primary objective is their own self-aggrandizement or enrichment, then we will be faced with another disastrous problem. So Biden can gather about him good people. If he chooses not to, then he will be unable by his own intellectual capacity to overcome or to deal with all of the problems that we are currently facing and that we will face. There's one more problem that I heard 2 days ago, and I've been looking carefully for a follow-up on it, and that is the Chinese have indicated clearly that they will no longer accept U.S. dollars in trade for the goods that they send here. And they want either renminbis, that's their currency, or yuans, or gold, or silver. And
our economy is not backed up by gold, so
correct.
That's going to be a problem.
Yeah. And this, it's been coming since 1971 when we went off the gold standard and said, you know, the emperor has no clothes. And finally somebody is saying, hey, look, the emperor has no clothes. Those pieces of paper aren't worth anything.
Right.
They just printed 3 trillion of them the last couple of months. 3 trillion of them. What are you going to do with? Does anybody have any idea what 3 trillion is?
Wow.
And so we want the Chinese to take them and say, here, take these and send us your sweaters and send us your computer parts and send us all the other things that you make so well. Because we don't make them here anymore. We sent all of our manufacturing someplace else.
Right,
large part of it. Thank you, Mr. Reagan.
So do you think that because of the situation that we're in, manufacturing will come back to this country?
It will have to. Yeah.
Okay.
It will have to. There are some very bright people in this country, entrepreneurs, smart people, who will be able to reestablish manufacturing initially at a small scale, but ultimately they can redo it. It was done before. It can be done again. There are good people who can do that. When we find that they don't have to compete with slave labor in Bangladesh or Vietnam or elsewhere, then they can charge an honest price for their product that will guarantee that they can put food on the table, take care of their children, and send them to school and have money left over for a vacation, like we used to when we had strong unions.
Right.
The middle class is melting very quickly now. Been slowly melting, but now the rate of the melt is very rapid under the twin pressure of economic collapse as a result of printing printing money and shutting down a consumption economy.
Our time is up, Peter, but
yes.
I would like to do and have another discussion with you on the fact that there's many people in this country who are going outside and not wearing masks, not taking the proper precautions, not doing social distancing. So I would like to do another show with you on what you see is going to happen if the people do not follow the proper precautions.
That answer was in today's Schenectady Gazette, in the midsections of Section A, and the answer to that question is straightforward. I would be happy to discuss that. I will set aside today's Gazette and reread it. I got halfway through this morning, and that's a very important question because we're getting there. We're already there, which is the answer to your question is, what do I think will happen when the people ignore the basic hygiene that one needs to practice when confronted with a highly virulent airborne infectious organism?
Okay, so Peter, our time is up. You've been listening to Dr. Peter Cookson. And I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Peter, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Have a great day. And
thank you,
everybody. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Yeah. So, bye-bye.